Hey, my name's Otis Gray, host of the Daily Book Club, a daily podcast where I read wonderful old books one chapter at a time. Simple as that. Whether you want to get engaged and lost in a fascinating story that has stood the test of time, or just relax to a good book, listen to the Daily Book Club to get wrapped up or unwind during your day. We'll read classic stories like Pride and Prejudice, The Enchanted April, The Wind in the Willows, beautiful stories all told from start to finish. And you can even do a real book club. Tune into the Daily Book Club Discord and discuss the readings with other book club listeners. However you want to listen, it's your choice. Subscribe to the Daily Book Club on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere else. New episodes every single day. So sit back, relax, and get lost in the Daily Book Club.
Amateur Traveler, episode 291. Today, the Amateur Traveler talks about tropical islands, Mayan ruins, and the Mosquito Coast as we go to Honduras. Welcome to the Amateur Traveler. Before we get into this week's episode, I do have three news stories for you. In the first one, airport confusion caused a man to get on a plane to the wrong country. Johanna, and I can't pronounce the last name, got to New York and then got in a plane that he thought was for Seattle. He speaks English very well. He went to check in and was directed by officers to go to the plane. At that point, a few Russian people who were going to Seattle as well, and I was talking to them, he said. But his son said the directions his father received weren't as clear as they needed to be. There was one gangway that was leading to two planes, and then it split so the two planes were side by side, and he got on the wrong plane. And he ended up not in Seattle, but in Frankfurt, Germany. And then the second news story is good news for some of you travelers. The Crowne Plaza Hotel is doing snore-free zones. The Intercontinental Group announced that they're going to have some different parts of the hotel that are set off for snore-free, and they're going to be patrolling the hallways to make sure that those of us who snore won't be allowed to stay in those zones. Although you do have to wonder if their walls are too thin, that they have to worry about that. And then the last news, U.S. travelers may find there's confusion right now that has caused some of the taxes that are normally on tickets going in and out of the U.S., 10 to 15% of a ticket, to be suspended. So normally you'd think that the prices would be 10 to 15% lower, but it turns out that some of the airlines are just pocketing the difference. And you can find links to all three of those stories at the show notes at amateurtraveler.com. I'd like to welcome the show Matt Wall, who is coming to us from Vancouver and has come to talk to us about Honduras. Matt, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Why did you go to Honduras?
Well, I went there in the first place to start an organization with a friend. He was planning to go down there and start this organization, and so he kind of recruited me to come along, so that's how I got involved.
And when you say an organization, I'm just going to go out on a limb here and say it probably wasn't a drug cartel.
No, that's right. An organization called Urban Promise Honduras. And so we had worked with Urban Promise here in Canada before. And then we decided that we really liked the model and decided to start one in Honduras. And they work with children and youth, so children and youth programs.
Excellent. And why should someone else go down to Honduras?
Well, it's an amazing place. It's kind of unknown from my experience. When you're kind of going down to Central America, I think most people decide on Costa Rica, maybe Belize, maybe Guatemala if you're really adventurous. And Honduras kind of gets overlooked a lot of the time, but it's got a lot of great stuff. And just like a lot of those other countries down there, and people are amazing. So it's a great place to go.
Okay. And what would you recommend if someone wasn't going down there to found a volunteer organization, but as instead was going down on a vacation, say a week or 2 weeks, what would you recommend for an itinerary?
It really depends on kind of what you want to do or what kind of traveler you are. A lot of people go to the Bay Islands. They're a group of islands off the north coast in the Caribbean, and those are really nice if you want kind of the beach, Caribbean feel. A lot of cruise ships pass by there too, so it's quite touristy up there. But really nice, amazing scuba diving, snorkeling, stuff like that. I would also recommend you like venture into the mainland. And Western Honduras is what I'm most familiar with and what I think is a great place as well. There's the town where I lived at is another big tourist destination. It's called Copan Ruinas.
Mm-hmm. So right on the Guatemala border.
Yeah, that's right. And so it's famous for some Mayan ruins that are there, some pretty incredible Mayan ruins. So a lot of people go there for that. And there's other stuff to do in the West as well. But if you're really adventurous and kind of want something completely different and like kind of roughing it, I would say go to the far northeastern part of the country, an area called the Mosquito Coast or La Mosquitia. There's a movie that was...
I was going to say that. I think I've heard of the movie, yeah.
Yeah, I haven't seen it, but it's pretty wild. They call it kind of the Little Amazon, and I think it's the biggest rainforest in Central America. So it kind of spans Honduras and Nicaragua, and you go there kind of if you want to go have like a jungle experience and go hang out with some people groups that are pretty far from modernization, and yeah, it's just pretty wild out there.
Okay. Now let's slow down and do that again in a little more detail. I assume we're probably flying in, if we're flying in to Tegucigalpa. That's not so easy to say. Or are there flights that go, you had recommended the Bay Islands, are there flights that go directly there from the USA?
I actually have never flown into Tegucigalpa.
Okay.
I have been there for a couple of days and I found that there's not a lot to do around there. Mm-hmm. So most people, I say, fly into the other major city, which is San Pedro Sula.
Okay.
And that's in the west more. But there are direct flights from, I think, maybe Florida or Texas to the Bay Islands as well. But most probably go through San Pedro Sula.
Okay. So you were recommending the Bay Islands. Where would we go? Any particular good beaches or dive spots you would recommend? You say this is a little more of a touristy beach crowd.
Yeah. Again, depending what you want to do, there's some great kind of all-inclusives that are kind of scattered around the island. Most of them are in the western part of the island, though.
And when you say island, we're talking about Roatan?
Yeah, sorry, Roatan. So that's the main one and the most developed island. And so most people spend their time on the west. There's a really nice beach called on the West Bay. It's supposed to be like the most beautiful beach in Honduras, and it's pretty incredible, and there's hotels all along the side there, along the beach. And then kind of the other big town there is West End, it's called, which is pretty close to the beach as well. But it's got like a lot of hotels, a lot of restaurants and stuff there, yeah.
Okay. And I'd say that the listeners of the show are a broad spectrum. We've got backpackers. We've got people who perked up when you said all-inclusive resort. Are there less expensive opportunities there also?
Yeah, like the all-inclusives, the real nice ones would be kind of set apart in their own little
world.
A little farther away, yeah.
Yeah.
And great, I don't know, if you're like on a honeymoon or whatever, mm-hmm. or if you got some money to spend or you don't want to travel much and just you got everything there. And then a little less expensive would probably be the West Bay, where you're staying right on that really nice beach.
Mm-hmm.
Still a little pricey. If you want to go cheaper to really cheap backpacking, would be the West End.
Okay.
West End, the town of West End. There's another island called Utila, where it's kind of known as the backpacking island, and it offers great scuba diving as well there. And so if you're going on a budget, that's kind of seems to be the place where most people go.
Okay. And before we leave the Bay Islands, any special days that you've spent there or any special day of the year to go there?
I would say like our springtime is probably Christmas springtime. When you start getting into the fall, that's kind of the rainy season.
Okay.
And hurricane season, so I would avoid that. But spring, I think summer is okay as well. But spring, summer, yeah.
And then the next spot that you were recommending way back there on the Guatemala-Honduras border, Copan Ruinas?
Yeah. Yeah, what do you want to know?
So you mentioned there was a well-known Mayan ruin there.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, there's a really amazing ruins. They've really kept them up quite well and rebuilt a lot of the stuff. And as far as I could tell, it was kind of the second best ruins in Central America next to Tikal in Guatemala. So they always said that Tikal was kind of like the New York of the Mayan world with its high pyramids and stuff. And then Copan is the Paris of the Mayan world because it has this real artisan culture. There's lots of really amazing sculptures, stelas, and carvings and stuff. And so you can go there. It's a 5-minute walk from town, and you just go there and you can see it with a guide or without. I would recommend taking a guide because they're pretty knowledgeable. And you just wander around the ruins. And there's also a really great museum that's there that a lot of the sculptures and structures from there are in the museum right there. So,
and I gathered, and I'm just looking at a Honduras map. It's not really that I've memorized Honduras, just to let you in on a little secret. I noticed that there's a place near there called Agua Caliente. So are there hot springs in the area?
Yes. It's a little ways out of town. You'd have to get on a bus to get there. One of the local buses, or there are tour groups that go up there as well. That's really cool up there too. You're kind of going into the mountains away from everything, and there's outside hot springs, which are kind of like the Honduran hot springs, which are really cheap and not the greatest by North American standards. just kind of like a couple pools of lukewarm water, and there's like a little picnic area kind of. But then you can also go into the river, which is right beside there, and the hot springs flow into the river, which can be nice.
So you're saying it really should be agua más o menos caliente.
Well, then there's this other part. I think it's called Luna Jaguar, Luna Jaguar.
Okay.
That you have to pay a little bit more to get in, but I mean, it's not much. It's like $7 or $8. And it's kind of this set apart place where they've built a bunch of really nice pools of different kind of temperatures that the hot springs flow into in this kind of jungle setting. And that area is really quite nice. It's kind of a little, it's not a resort, but it's a little getaway, I guess.
Okay.
Yeah.
Anything else we should know about the area around Copan?
Yeah, there. I mean, that's where I live. So there's lots to do around there as far as I'm concerned. The town itself is really nice. It's kind of colonial style with cobblestone streets, mm-hmm. lots of great restaurants and hotels. It's kind of like a cowboy culture out there.
Okay.
And so there's lots of like good horseback riding. You can go up into the hills and mountains and ride around. There's a nice destination kind of just outside the town as well that you can either walk to. It'd be like half an hour walk or take a horseback ride tour too. It's a little Mayan village called La Pintada.
Okay.
It's just kind of a cool place you can go and see how the traditional people group, they're called the Maya Chorti people group. You can just go to the town and kind of see how they live, see their culture. They have a little kind of women's co-op where they do weavings. And so you can pick up different tablecloths and stuff like that there. And there's some little ruins kind of near there as well. The whole area, the whole valley is just scattered with ruins because it used to be like one big city. So there's kind of like statues and ruins kind of everywhere if you just kind of look for them.
And you mentioned the Mayans. It's not uncommon, I think, for the perception that somebody in North America thinks the Mayans died out, which is not really the case. I know Guatemala is 50% Mayan. I don't know what the percentage is in Honduras, but I imagine it's significant. So how much is the culture still evident in that area? You say you're going to a Mayan village. You're not going to a ruins of a Mayan village. You're going to a village where the Maya still live.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I don't know tons about the history, but I guess the Maya, since the conquistadors came or since the Europeans came, I guess they've split into kind of different groupings. And a big one in the western Honduras around Copan is called the Maya Chorti. And so they have their own language called Chorti, which is kind of a dying language. I don't think many people speak it.
Okay.
Maybe a couple really elderly people speak it. And there's a few Chorti as well in Guatemala, but I think Guatemala has more Mayan people in general.
Okay. And that's part of my question, too, is all the little countries down in Central America, what distinguishes Honduras for you? What makes Honduras Honduras?
Like opposed to the other countries down
right.
there?
Right. What distinguishes it from Guatemala or Nicaragua besides keeping the two apart?
It's kind of got a real kind of laid back, peaceful feel. I feel like the people are pretty peace-loving. I think it's compared to Guatemala and El Salvador and Nicaragua down there, they really haven't had like the violence in the past and the revolutions like these other countries have seen.
Mm-hmm.
And so in some ways it kind of seems a little bit more reserved as well. I know Guatemala is quite colorful. They decorate their buses and everything, and the Mayan people wear really colorful clothes and stuff. But in Honduras, it's just kind of less in your face, I guess, and people are just really nice and approachable. Not that people in other places are, but
okay.
I don't know. That's a hard question.
The other place you recommended was the Mosquito Coast.
Yeah.
Any particular activities or trails or that you would recommend if we go to the Mosquito Coast besides swatting at mosquitoes?
Yeah, we just did kind of a quick 5-day trip into the Mosquito, La Mosquita. So there are different ways you can do it. It kind of gets a little pricey. We took the cheapest way, which is you drive in. A better way would probably be to fly into somewhere. I think you would be flying into Puerto Lempira, I think. Is the place you would fly in probably.
Uh-huh.
And that would just give you more time to see the jungle and everything in there. But, I mean, really, you have to go with the tour group to get into there because, I mean, most of the people there don't speak any Spanish or English, obviously. They speak their native dialects, which not many people speak. So. And there's no roads or anything, very little electricity, running water. So you're really kind of out in the boonies, and it really pays to have a guide with you. So you would probably arrange that ahead of time with a tour group. And the tour we did, we kind of spent 2 days traveling to get kind of into the jungle. And then we kind of just had 1 day in there to see the area. We stayed in kind of this little town of just a couple, I don't know, maybe 50 people.
Uh-huh.
And then we took kind of a jungle hike to see these petroglyphs and just kind of went up the river a bit, which is really cool. But yeah, you kind of just go there, I think, to see the area. And there's some well-known hikes. There was one mountain there right where we were called Pico Dama, which is supposed to be really good. We didn't do it, but it's supposed to be a really great hike. Yeah.
Okay. When you first went down to Honduras, what surprised you?
Well, where we were in Western Honduras, like I said, it's kind of like a cowboy culture.
Right.
Which that really surprised me. It kind of felt like we were back like in the Wild West and everybody's walking around in cowboy hats and a lot of people have like their machetes on them and people carry their guns around and stuff. And it's just kind of people riding on horses and just kind of got this Wild West feel.
Okay. I don't know if you've had a chance to see what the guidebooks say about Honduras. If so, are there things the guidebooks recommend that you would say you weren't impressed with?
I do have a Lonely Planet book, which I found was pretty good, I guess. I can't really think of anything off the top of my head.
What would you tell them they need to add to the Lonely Planet in the next edition? The thing you really need to know about Honduras is,
I don't know how much they mentioned about hitchhiking and just kind of people's general hospitality, I think can really get you far and into places that you wouldn't expect to go. I think they probably do say something about they don't recommend hitchhiking, but we did a lot of that and we found it quite easy and people are really willing to pick you up and take you where you want to go. And not just hitchhiking, but like meeting people around town and they just love to show you what they do, where they live, or have you over for supper or whatever. And for me, that's kind of the best part about traveling. And I don't know, maybe you can't put that in a guidebook or whatever. But
well, you'd certainly have some risks, obviously legal risks, if you put that in a guidebook and something happens to someone. But
yeah, that's true.
Fortunately, you wouldn't have any of that if you mentioned it on a podcast, I'm sure. Okay. What do you wish you'd known before you went, though?
Oh, this actually ties into the previous question. When I first went down there, they were really recommending that I take malaria pills from the physician or whoever I saw up here. And then also the guidebooks, I think a lot of them mentioned that as well, which my wife did end up taking them, but I did not. And really, in pretty much all the country, there's no threat of malaria.
Even in the Mosquito Coast area? I mean, that's where I would be more concerned.
Yeah, that would be the one area where you would need to be a little cautious. But even then, like, I didn't take any. When we asked about it, our guides were kind of like, just use mosquito spray and you'll be fine. But if you want to be real cautious, you could take it if you're going there. But the rest of the country, it's not necessary.
Okay. What's the best day you've had in Honduras?
Oh, yeah. I thought about this one ahead of time. So there's a river that flows through Copan Arenas, where I lived. And one of the best days that I had was me and a friend bought some inner tubes from the local tire shop and took a bus kind of upstream to another town and just got a couple beers and got into the water with our tubes and floated down the river. It ended up being maybe not the greatest idea, and I wouldn't recommend it because there are some rocks and rapids and stuff, and my friend's tube ended up getting popped. But before that happened, it was really fun. And I made it all the way back to town. He had to walk kind of the last couple miles. But yeah, it was just great. We were just relaxing on the river. We found like this little waterfall that we didn't know existed. So we kind of hiked up there a little bit, took a break. And yeah, it was just a great time.
And you've had a chance to get to know people there, to interact more than most tourists do. Who do you wish you could introduce everybody who's coming down to Honduras to?
Oh man, so many people. Do I just have to say one?
you can name a couple.
There's one guy in town in Copan Arenas named Elias, and he was the manager of a little restaurant, and so we got to know him, and he was just an amazing person and taught us a lot about the culture and, yes, starting up business in Honduras, and just really liked what we were doing, so we kind of had a good connection with him, and he is still involved with the organization.
Would you recommend the restaurant?
Yeah, I would. He actually doesn't own it anymore, though. But I will recommend it. It's called Casa Villa Mil.
Okay.
Villa, V-I-L-L-A, Mil, M-I-L. It's just a block from the center of town. And the owners of that now are also really nice still. So he was a great person. And so a lot of the people I worked with were kids and youth, obviously, with the program that we were doing. And one kid that just stands out above the rest is a little boy named Brian. I think he's in grade 4 or 5 now. And I mean, he was just a character. He thought he was older than he was, I think. Sometimes ended up being a troublemaker, but he would come into our office all dressed in like dress shirts and hair gelled and dress shoes and just a little player or something. He was hilarious. And then I got to mention one more person, pretty much the first Honduran that I met. A man named Carlos in San Pedro Sula. He met me and my friend when we first came down there, and we were kind of trying to figure out a place to stay in San Pedro when we first came down. And so my friend, emailed people around trying to figure something out, and he got an email back from another friend of his saying, oh yeah, I have somebody that'll pick you up at the airport. And it was this guy named Carlos. And so we had both never met him before, and we kind of weren't sure if it was going to work out or whatever, or what was going to happen. But so we showed up, not having heard from Carlos at all, but we showed up at the airport and he was there waiting for us, and he just came up to us and like, hey, are you Matt? And I was like, yeah. Hey, I'm Carlos. Nice to meet you. Let's go to my house. And so he took us to his house, great place. And we met his family. And right from the beginning, he was like, my house is your house. Stay here as long as you want. Whenever you're in town, just call me up. You can stay here. And it was just the nicest man you've ever met and greatest, most hospitable family you've ever met. And for me, that kind of epitomizes Hondurans and just how friendly people are down there.
Excellent.
Yeah.
You've spent some time down there. What do you still not understand about the Honduran culture? I just don't get why they...
I just don't get why they get these songs on their cell phones and then play them full blast, no headphones or anything, on the bus when you're around tons of people just blast their music on their cell phones like nobody cares.
So it's just dueling cell phone music on the buses.
Yeah, whatever reason that it works out, there's usually not more than one or two, but still, like any bus ride, most likely you'll have somebody playing music, whether everyone wants to listen to it or not.
All right.
Yeah.
And when did you feel closest to home, most familiar, and when did you feel furthest from home?
I mean, for me, I felt closest to home when I kind of got to know people more, and it was kind of like Copan was my home. I would run into people on the street that I knew. I would buy all my fruits and vegetables from the same lady who knew my name. It just, everybody kind of knows each other. And so I started kind of getting a home feel.
Was there one thing you did or one incident that you felt like after that you were a local? They, you know, now we accept that he's one of us.
I don't know if I ever did get accepted as one of them. Like to think I did, but I think for me, I think kind of an initiation rite is getting invited over to somebody's house or inviting yourself over to somebody's house. It seems to be kind of the same thing. And having them serve you kind of lukewarm, almost cold coffee with tons of sugar in it. And you just downing it like it's nothing. You kind of just got to do it.
Okay.
That to me is kind of, yeah, I felt like, yeah, I must be a part of this now.
Okay.
But for maybe for someone else who won't be there for a long time, just going to one of these coffee shops that has internet and just spending time downloading movies or something or talking to friends back home, you kind of forget where you are for a little while, I think. So that would be another close to home thing.
Okay. As we go to wind this down, is there anything else that you would really want people to know before they go to Honduras? If you don't speak Spanish, how readily accessible is the country going to be?
Yeah, it definitely helps to speak some Spanish, but you should be, I would say you'd be okay for the most part. Where you're going will probably be quite, people will know English, like in the Bay Islands and all along the North Coast. Mm-hmm. It's predominantly this people group called the Garifuna people, and they all speak English. They are kind of descendant from the English kind of had, I'm not sure how it fits in. Somehow the English had some sort of post up in, I know they own like Belize and maybe they own the coast as well at one time.
Okay.
But for whatever reason, these people all speak English. And then in Copan, a good majority of people speak English as well because it's so touristy.
Right, sure.
Sometimes you got to figure it out. If you're going to go into kind of places out of the way, you figure it out. I went down there not knowing any Spanish. And I obviously learned, there's some great Spanish schools as well. A good place to learn it, but when you're kind of learning, you figure it out.
Okay. Do you have a Spanish school you would recommend? I get this question occasionally.
Yeah, definitely. There's the one in Copan called Guacamaya.
Guacamaya, okay.
Which is Spanish for macaw.
Okay.
The macaw bird. That's where I did all my classes and where most all of our friends did it as well. They also have some great programs where you can kind of group in a homestay along with your Spanish courses.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's a great way to learn the language as well.
Excellent.
And one other thing, going back to what people need to know before they come down, the food in Honduras, we haven't mentioned it yet, but definitely you got to experiment with some of the food and you got to try what's called a baleada,
okay,
which is kind of like the Honduran national food. It's a flour tortilla with refried beans, cream, and cheese, and they're cheese is kind of like the Mexican kind of, it's a salty kind of crumbly cheese.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. Which might take a little getting used to, but once you do, it's amazing. And in a baleada, it's really good. You can get it with egg as well in there, which is really good. And sometimes they'll put avocado or something else in there for you, but that's definitely a must.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Okay. Last two questions. You know what's coming here. Finish this sentence for me. You really know you're in Honduras when what?
You really know you're in Honduras if you're eating a baleada and drinking coffee.
Lukewarm coffee with lots of sugar.
Yeah, lukewarm coffee. Well, you don't have to get it, but that's the Honduran way. Lukewarm coffee with extra sugar next to a bunch of cowboys.
Okay. And if you had to summarize Honduras in three words, what three words would you use?
I would say peaceful.
Okay.
Beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
And wild.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Matt, thanks for coming on the show and telling us some of your love for Honduras.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me.
We had a few comments on the episode last week on the Azores. I'd say the least happy with the episode was someone who runs an Azores site, Antonio, and he had many different critiques about the episode, and I'll let you look at the comment on the episode, Travel to the Azores, but I did want to pull out a couple of them. One is he mentioned a couple of things that we did not mention or that the guest did not mention. There are always going to be things we do not mention. Whenever we have a guest on, that will be their opinion, and certainly within a half hour time, there are a lot of things that we're not going to mention, but at one point, point, even though I didn't speak Portuguese, I was guessing at Portuguese meanings, and I got, as you can imagine, some of those wrong. Ponta Delgada, for instance, means narrow point. It doesn't have anything to do with gato, and so I was misunderstanding the pronunciation there. And then also, the town of Vila Franca do Campo does not have anything to do with the French. It actually means free town in the fields, in case you were wondering. And then I also heard from Jameson, who says he's a rather new listener. He's been listening to your show for about the last 3 months and find it quite enjoyable. I like the format and enjoy sharing in other people's adventures as you interview them. Your equipment sounds really nice, and your interview format brings a new dynamic to the show. I was listening to the episode this morning on my commute up to work about the Azores. At one point, you were discussing the rock type on the Azores, and you asked if it was a pumice, like the a'a found in Hawaii, and your guest corrected you to say, no, it's basalt rock. I feel as if you're a knowledgeable guy, and I think you might slightly misunderstand the difference here. Pumice is a textual term given to the various forms of extrusive rock or lava rock, as many people know it. It forms in superheated rock under high pressure, is explosively expelled from a volcano, rapidly cooling and depressurizing the rock. It traps the air bubbles inside the rock, creating the pumice texture. Generally, pumice is the name of the rock that is less dense than water due to the conditions under which it is formed. It can be any type of lava rock, from basalt to rhyolite. And actually, yes, I was intentionally using the textural form of the question. In Hawaii, you'd say, is it a'a versus pohoihoi? And that was the question I had meant to ask, but I don't think Janine knew those terms. And so when she answered basalt, I decided not to pursue it because I was actually looking for something different. And then we also had a comment on episode 289. This was left in the Amateur Traveler Facebook community from Bola, who says, what a wonderful episode. And this is the Travel to Nigeria episode. What a wonderful episode. As a fellow Nigerian, I really enjoyed and appreciated the descriptions and many definitions of Lagos. The presenter was very honest. Yet despite that, I still feel very happy and very proud of my country. Addictive chaos, indeed. Laugh out loud. With that, we're going to end this episode of The Amateur Traveler. If you have comments, feel free to do as all three of these listeners have done and leave a comment on the episode at amateurtraveler.com or comment in the Facebook community and see if you can get some discussion going there. You can also send me an email to host at amateurtraveler.com. And don't forget, you can follow me on Twitter at Chris2X. And as always, thanks so much for listening. One more cathedral.